45. Jack Move. Rydell had taken a surveillance course back at the academy, and his favorite part had been going out and following people. It wasn't something you did alone, but with at least one partner, and the more partners the better. You learned how to trade off, somebody taking your place, and how to deke up ahead of the subject so you'd be ready when the next guy needed to trade off. That way the subject never had the same person behind him for too long. There was a definite art to it, and when you got it down, it was sort of like a dance. He hadn't really gotten the chance to put it into practice in his very brief career as a police officer, or later when he'd worked for Intensicure, but he felt like he'd been pretty good at it, and it had given him an idea of what it would feel like if you were being followed, and particularly if you were being followed by some people who knew how to do it right. And that was what he found himself thinking about now, as he shouldered the duffel with Ray Toei's projector in it and prepared to depart this pathetic excuse for a crime scene. If Laney had wanted him to attract someone's attention by standing here, well, he'd stood here. But maybe now, he thought, he was getting that watched feeling because Laney had told him he'd be sure to be noticed if he came here. Could be nerves. Maybe. But actually he didn't feel nervous, just tired. He'd driven all night up the coast with Creedmoor, and all the downtime he'd had today had been when he'd fallen asleep listening to Ray Toei. What he felt like now was going back to his room, checking out the projector to see if she'd come back, then hitting the bed. But there it was, that prickling at the back of his neck. He turned and looked back, but there was nobody, just the place where the kills had been sprayed over dried blood. Guy going by in the direction of Oakland and Rydell's room. Young guy with dark military buzzed hair, black coat, black scarf up around his face. Seemed not to see Rydell, just kept walking, hands in his pockets. Rydell fell in behind him about 15 feet. He tried to imagine this place the way it had been before, when it was a regular bridge. Millions of cars had gone through here, this same space where he walked now. It had all been open then, just girders and railing and deck. Now it was this tunnel, everything patched together out of junk, used lumber, plastic, whatever people could find. All of it lashed up, however anybody could get it to stay, it looked like, and somehow did stay, in spite of the winds he knew must come through here. He'd been back in a bayou once in Louisiana, and something about the way it looked in here reminded him of that. There was stuff hanging everywhere, tubing and cables, and things whose function he couldn't identify. And it was like Spanish moss in a way, everything softened at the outline. And the light now was dim and sort of underwater looking, just these banks of scavenged fluorescence slung every 20 feet or so, some of them dead and others flickering. He walked around a puddle where a vendor had dumped about 10 pounds of dirty shaved ice. Up ahead, he saw the guy with the black scarf turn into a cafe, one of these tiny little places you got in here, maybe two small tables and a counter that sat four or five. Big blonde boy, looked like a weightlifter, was coming out as the scarf went in. And the weightlifter made just that little bit of eye contact with Rydell that told him. They were doing him. The trade-off. He was being tailed, and by at least 3 people. Weightlifter started in the direction of Rydell's bed and breakfast, Treasure Island, Oakland. Back of his neck as wide as Rydell's thigh. As Rydell passed the cafe, he looked in and saw the scarf ordering a coffee, just as normal as pie. So he didn't look behind him, because he knew that if he did that, they'd know. They would. Just like he'd known when the weightlifter blew it by looking him in the eye. The belt he'd slung the duffel from was cutting into his shoulder through his nylon jacket. And he thought about Laney and Klaus and the rooster, about how they all obviously thought the projector was really important or valuable. Was that what he was being followed for? Or was it about this mystery man of Laney's, his man who wasn't there? Otherwise, he didn't think he had any serious long-term enemies up here, though it was hard to be sure. And he didn't think these guys were ordinary jackers, because it looked to him like they really knew what they were doing. He reached into the jacket pocket and felt the knife. It was there, and he was glad he had it, though the thought of actually cutting somebody with it bothered him. The thing about knives was that the people who thought they wanted to use them on other people usually had no idea how much mess it made. It wasn't like in the movies. Cut people bled like stuck pigs. He'd had to deal with a few cut people around the Sunset Lucky Dragon, and it could get tricky, because who knew who was seropositive? He and Durius had these goggles they were supposed to put on to keep people's blood from getting in their eyes, but usually it just happened all at once, and they didn't remember the goggles until it was likely too late anyway. But the main thing about knives, even ones that cut steel belt radials like ripe banana, was that they weren't much good in a gunfight. Someone had slung up an old anti-shoplifting mirror above a closed stall, and as he approached this, he tried to see who might be following him, but there was enough foot traffic in here that he only got a generalized sense of people moving. But what really bothered him now was that he was just doing what they'd probably expect him to, heading back to wherever he was going to spend the night, assuming they didn't already know where that was. And once he got there, what then? He'd be trapped up in his room, no exit but that ladder, and they'd have him. He guessed he could just keep walking, but he didn't see what that would get him either. What he needed, he thought, was something he could do that they weren't expecting, something that put the shoe on the other foot. Or anyway, he should lose them, whoever they were. Then maybe he could raise Laney and get Laney's take on who they might be. He'd had an instructor in Knoxville who'd like to talk about lateral thinking, which in a way wasn't that far off what Durius meant when he talked about serious users getting lateral out on the sidewalk outside Lucky Dragon. Just losing it. What it took sometimes was just your basic jack move, something nobody, maybe even you, was expecting. To his right now, he saw he was passing a stretch of wall that was actually canvas, like a sail or an old tent, stretched tight over lumber, and maybe half an inch thick with however many coats of paint it had had since it was put up here. Some kind of mural. But he wasn't noticing that. The switchblade sounded so loud opening it that he was sure they'd have heard it, so he just moved, sweeping the ceramic blade down, then sideways, to cut himself a backward L, through which he ducked and stepped, as if in a dream, the paint on the canvas crackling as he did so, into warmth and a different light, and these completely unexpected people seated around a table, cards in their hands, mother-of-pearl chips piled on the table in front of them, and one of them, a woman, the nipples of her bare breasts transfixed with surgical steel, the stub of a small cigar wedged into the corner of her mouth, met Rydell's eye and said, "I'll see you one and raise you one." "Never mind me," Rydell heard himself say, as he saw a man with a tattooed scalp, still holding his hand of cards, raise his other hand, with a gun in it, from beneath the table. And simultaneously he realized that he still had the black knife open in his hand. He felt a weird wash of cold down his spine as his feet just kept moving, past the table and the man, and the deep and somehow limitlessly large black hole in the winking ring of stainless steel that was the pistol's muzzle. Through a thick brown velour curtain that smelled of ancient movie houses, and he was still moving, apparently intact. Feeling his hand thumb the button, closing and cocking the blade against his hip as he went, something he wouldn't have thought of doing otherwise, pocketing the knife. In front of him a ladder, rough sawn from 2x4s, straight to it and just climbing as fast as he could. Took him up through a square hole in a splintered timber deck, narrow walkway between walls cut from peeling billboards. A woman's huge stained paper eye faded there, as if staring into infinite distance. Stop. Breathe. Heart pounding. Listen. Laughter. The card players? He started along the walkway, feeling a rising sense of triumph. He'd done it. Lost them. Wherever he was up here, he'd be able to find his way back out and down, and then he'd see how it went. But he had the projector, and he'd lost them, and he hadn't gotten his ass shot for interrupting somebody's poker game. Lateral thinking, he said, congratulating himself as he reached the end of the walkway and rounded a corner. He felt the rib crack as the weightlifter hit him and knew that the black glove, like the ones he'd trained with in Nashville, was weighted with lead. It sent him back against the opposite wall, his head slamming against that, and his whole left side refused to move when he tried. The weightlifter pulled the black glove back for a roundhouse into Rydell's face and smiled. Rydell tried to shake his head. Faintest look of surprise, maybe confusion, in the other's eyes, his face. Then nothing. The smile gone slack. The weightlifter went suddenly and very heavily to his knees, swayed, and crashed sideways to the gray timber deck, revealing behind him this slender, gray-haired man in a long, smooth coat the color of old moss, who was replacing something there, the lapel held open with his other hand. Eyes regarding Rydell through gold-rimmed glasses, a deep crease up each cheek, like he smiled a lot. The man adjusted his beautiful coat and lowered his hands. "Are you injured?" Rydell drew a ragged breath, wincing as the rib seemed to grate.
"Rib," he managed.
"Are you armed?" Rydell looked into the clear, bright, unmoving eyes.
"Knife in my right pocket," he said.
"Please keep it there," the man said. "Are you able to walk?"
"Sure,"
Rydell said, taking a step and almost falling on the weightlifter. "Come with me, please," the man said and turned, and Rydell followed.